Yes, that's true.
Ooh, I don't want that on my karmic record.
No, I really don't.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Yes, that's true.
Yes, that's true.
Yes, it is true. This is the Patrick Madrid Show.
Yes, that's true.
That is true. See, she's getting
more. No more.
It's like catnip. Oh. It really is like catnip. Okay.
Back to business. That last call was so fun.
Wasn't she funny?
She was great.
I could just picture her and her husband roaring.
I'm still laughing from it. It's so good.
Yeah, that was good. Well, that's awesome. 888-914-9149. And if you didn't hear that, you need to go back and listen to the last call of the first hour. 888-914-9149. Cyrus, chances are if you've ever been in the dentist office or the tire store to get your tires changed, you probably had to wait a while. And you probably saw beat up old copies of People magazine staring at you from the table, right? You've seen that before, haven't you?
Yeah, who hasn't? Everybody.
People magazine. Been around forever. It's actually been around, 48 years. People magazine's been around. And it's going out of business.
Oh.
Yeah, that's the whole story.
Well, that's not really much of a surprise, is it?
Well, no, it's really not. Yes, that's true.
Stop.
It's not really much of a surprise because print media is largely dying out. I mean, even some of like the mainstay newspapers, the LA Times, the New York Times, and other major newspapers, let alone those who have dwindled and gone out of business, the smaller ones. But even the big ones, they're really hurting because people don't turn to print anymore. They turn to their phones. That's where they get so much of their info. Probably true for me, too. But that would be a harbinger, I think, of some of the other major magazines that are going away. I used to publish a magazine for long about, I guess all told, probably close to about 15 years, Envoy Magazine. And I started publishing it in, when was it? 1996. And it was fun. I mean, it was really a lot of fun. It was almost like having a new child in the family when a new issue of the magazine would come out. We'd work on it, work on it, work on it. Then it would come out. And then it would go out around the country to, I think at our peak, we might have had about 15,000 paid subscribers, which is nothing. I mean, you can't long-term produce a magazine for that. But we had a lot of fun doing it, and it was really very satisfying. But eventually, just the cost of paper and the cost of printing and the postage and everything's going up, and you can't really jack up the prices on a magazine. It just becomes cost ineffective. And so when it reached the point where we realized this is not really sustainable, then I retired the magazine. But it was fun. But you know, to try to start a magazine now, I think it would be, you know, like buying stock in MySpace.
Yeah, right.
Probably not going to do much good for you.
On my morning walks, I still see a few houses in my neighborhood get the Wall Street Journal. I see it rolled up and in a plastic bag on their driveway. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow, this is all old news. I mean,
in terms of like how that news that you could have read on your phone yesterday,
right?
They'll read it this morning in the paper.
That's exactly what I mean.
Yeah. No, that's true. Yes, that's true. I can endlessly use that.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true.
We have reached our quota for the day.
I don't know.
All right, we'll see.
How far can we go with it? We haven't found out yet. Let's go. We will find out, though. I promise you that. Let's go to Dominic, in Whittier, California. Good morning, Dominic.
Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
I am well, thank you. I hope you are, too.
Very good. Doing well. Thank you, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Real quick, sir, regarding the rosary, and the Holy Rosaries and the Glorious Mysteries, the last two mysteries are designated around the Virgin Mary, the Ascension into Heaven. Excuse me, the Assumption into Heaven, as well as the coronation of the Queen of Heaven and Earth. I'm a little bit confused why we have that in the Glorious Mysteries, because we focus on Jesus' life, death, and resurrection. And I always want to know why the last two are kind of dedicated to Mary.
Very good question, and I'll do my best to answer it. So the first thing to note is that these mysteries, that we celebrate, they have to do with the life of Christ. And you'll notice that the bodily assumption of Our Lady and her crowning in heaven are things that were done for her by Christ. So it's associated with Jesus. The focus, of course, is what Jesus is doing for his mother. And so we're meditating upon that. We also meditate upon the fact that Mary is receiving these special gifts that not only would we have had it not been for Adam and Eve, but also in a certain sense, we will receive these gifts when we get to heaven. So let's take a look at the Assumption of Mary and also the crowning of Mary. The two can be sort of glimpsed together in Revelation chapter 12, beginning in verse 1, where we see the Bible talking about a woman clothed with the sun and on her head a crown of stars standing on the moon. So the male child that she is in labor to give birth to is Jesus. So the literal child born to this woman is Jesus. So the literal mother of Jesus would be Mary, and that's the woman being spoken of there. So when we meditate upon that, you'll notice that in Revelation chapter 12, the focus begins with the woman, but it's really ultimately about this male child that she has given birth to. And so when we meditate upon Jesus as this Savior, our Redeemer, our Messiah, we can't help but take into account the fact that Mary is the one that the Lord chose to be his mother. So we are meditating then upon what did he do for her by her bodily assumption into heaven. Now, this passage doesn't say that Mary was bodily assumed into heaven, but it's one of those scriptural monuments that we can see her in heaven. And the same is true for the crowning, because it says that she's wearing a crown of stars. Now, this is not inconsistent with what we see in Scripture. So for example, in 1 Corinthians 9, verse 25, in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 8, and others, there are a number of other passages, where it talks about those in heaven will receive crowns. So we too in heaven will be crowned. So in the fifth glorious mystery, Mary is, we're talking about her or remembering the fact that she was crowned Queen of Heaven. This is in essence a way of seeing what Jesus promises to all of us and that she received first. So I guess maybe the best way I can conclude this answer, Dominic, is that if you look at it closely, you'll see that it really isn't just a solely focusing on Mary. It is certainly something that's important about Mary, but in the background there, or really maybe even in the foreground, you see Jesus, and it is his doing this for Mary that is really what we are meditating upon. What do you think?
Perfect. Now I got some perfect firepower when I go against my Protestant coworkers here.
Is that a question they've asked you?
I could never really back it up fully. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just like, you know, why, you know, if you believe so much in Jesus, you know, why do you have the last two mysteries dedicated to Mary? And I kind of had a booklet, and I would always say, well, because she's coronated, she's crowned as Queen of Heaven and Earth by Jesus. So it's actually Jesus's action. And, you know, they would always defer and say, no, well, you know, but your last two mysteries, you're focusing on Mary.
Yeah, and I would say, so what? what of it? Jesus said in John chapter 17, Father, I have given them the glory that you have given to me. So Jesus himself says that he glorifies those around him, most importantly, his own mother, who is sinless. So your friends, I mean, in a way, Dominic, and you probably already know this, but I'd like to revisit something I mentioned yesterday. This is one of the phenomena associated with the Protestant Reformation, and that is, if the Catholic Church teaches it, we don't like it, you know, and it's just like a Pavlovian reflex where, without really giving it much thought, they're against it just because the Catholic Church teaches it. Now, you could point this out. You could say, well, by your logic, then, we should just ignore or eliminate, perhaps, all those passages in Scripture that talk about Mary. So Luke's Gospel, you know, chapter 1, it's all about Mary. I mean, it's not all about Mary, but a great deal of it is about Mary. It's focusing on her, and what did she say, and what did she do, and how did she act, and where did she go? So if you want to kind of play that play that game with them, say then if you object to having two mysteries of the rosary that are going to be focused on what the Lord did for Mary, then you probably should take your scissors and cut those sections out of the Bible, because they're focusing on Mary. And not just there, but in the wedding at Cana in John chapter 2, and Mary at the foot of the cross, where she's been given to St. John for his safekeeping, and vice versa. So it becomes a silly argument. I mean, it is a silly argument that they're making, but you can show how silly it is by raising this as a parallel to it.
Cool. 10-4. Well, thank you very much, sir.
10-4, good buddy. Boy, I haven't heard that in a long time. Are you old enough to remember the song Convoy, Dominic, from the 1970s?
Yes, sir, but I'm old enough. But I'm a police officer in Orange County, so I'm used to that type of lingo.
Sound? Yeah, I guess you would be. For me, it's just sort of like from that world of truckers, but I guess it's used in many situations, right?
Very well, sir.
Well, you know what, Dominic? I'm glad that we had a chance to talk today. I hope you stay safe. Are you in a cruiser or are you on foot, or how do you do your police business each day?
Actually, sir, I'm very fortunate with my wife. I'm at a courthouse, so I'm a bailiff. I have a good judge. She's a good Catholic as well. She's Cuban Catholic, and my wife is very happy because I'm safe in a courthouse, theoretically. And my wife is Polish Catholic, and we attend a Polish church in Yorba Linda. So
beautiful.
Let me tell you, the Poles got it right.
Well, you're a very fortunate man. Well, do pass along my kind regards to the judge. Tell her that I wish her well, and I hope she'll listen to the Patrick Madrid show one of these days.
All right, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good to talk to you, Dominic. I want to spend a little bit of time giving you the biblical background for the different mysteries of the rosary, and I'll do that here in a minute. First, though, let me take another call. Dave in Spring Valley, Illinois, thank you for calling and welcome.
My question is, I was listening, I do mass, I'm a truck driver, I do mass on my phone, and I heard, this is, I don't know, I never heard it before, you know how the priest during consecration says, this is the bread of life?
Yes.
Well, the priest said, this is our spiritual food. I never heard that before.
Okay,
is that normal?
Is he changing the words as they appear when he celebrates mass? In other words, in the Missalette, it says... the bread of life.
Oh, I don't know what there's. This is from Toronto, so I don't know. I listen to the Toronto one, but you always hear the bread of life. Every church I go to, it's bread of life. But this guy literally says this is our spiritual food, just like our spiritual drink for the other, for the wine changing into the blood. And I never heard that before. I'm like, wow, I better call Patrick to find out because I don't know.
Well, here's what we can do.
You know?
here's what we can do. We have published in the Missalette the different Eucharistic prayers. So there are several of them, and the priest has the discretion to choose which one he wants. And in some of these Eucharistic prayers, the wording is somewhat different. Now, the key parts are going to be the same. This is my body, this is my blood. But there will be some variation depending upon which Eucharistic prayer he chooses. So my advice to you would be, when you go to your parish, I don't have one in front of me, otherwise I would try to look it up here, but I don't have it. But you want the Missalette, and just look at the different Eucharistic prayers that are printed there. And when you get to that part, see if one of them is using a phraseology that might be what you're hearing. And that may be the simple explanation for it. I just don't have it here in front of me to drill down and tell you. But that's one way
that
you could do it.
That was just a quick question. Did you ever hear that?
Well, I don't want to say I haven't heard it, but I'm not aware of what the specifics are from one prayer to another. I mean, I've heard them all over the years of my life, but I don't want to wing it and say definitely yes, definitely no, because I would need to look at this as well to see if maybe what you're hearing is part of the prescribed prayer the priest would pray. I don't know off the top of my head, and I don't want to wing it.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. That's fine. I appreciate it. I think I'm going to go and I got a St. Pete. It's a Benedictine monk house. I don't know what they call it, but that's pretty close to my house, and I'll probably go over there. Monastery.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, in Spring Valley.
Yeah, so you can ask the priest in the sacramentary, which is the book that's on the altar when the priest is celebrating Mass, that has the prayers of the Mass, and you can ask them. Could they either look for you, or they might be able to tell you off the top of their head, chances are, or ask if you can see it, and then you'll be able to see what the words are, and that would narrow it down. So let's assume then, wanting to give people the benefit of the doubt, that the priest is reading from a Eucharistic prayer that includes that phraseology at some point along the way. And maybe that's not a Eucharistic prayer that you're used to hearing at your parish. So that would be a simple explanation. Another possible explanation is that maybe he's customizing, he's freelancing and changing the words. That's not good because he's supposed to read what's in the liturgical books. So the only way to really know, though, is to narrow that down. And as I say, I just simply don't know the answer to that question off the top of my head. So, Dave, I hope that's helpful. At least give you a start in the right direction. Thank you. 888-914-9149. So let's talk a little bit about the biblical basis of the rosary. A few things I want to share with you. Number one, in the traditional form of the three mysteries, the sorrowful mystery, the glorious mystery, and the joyful mystery, this is patterned after the total number of prayers, the Hail Marys that are prayed. It's patterned after the 150 Psalms of the Old Testament. And not only is the number 150 significant because of the 150 Psalms in the Old Testament, but also the Old Testament Psalms were inspired by the Lord to be prayed out loud. And so pious Jews, they would recite these prayers out loud and they would repeat them. So the Psalms were a repetitious prayer. What's interesting is that even within some of the Psalms, there are repetitions of the same statement, you know. And this is something to keep in mind, that as you're reading the Psalms, not only were they composed for the purpose of praying out loud, but also they include repetition of the same phrase over and over and over again. And the Rosary, of course, which is a repetitious prayer, is patterned after the Holy Bible in the Psalms. The next thing is, let's take a look at the different mysteries. So the sorrowful mysteries are the agony in the garden, the scourging at the pillar, the crowning with thorns, the carrying of the cross, and the crucifixion and death of Christ on the cross. So you can see the agony in the garden very clearly in Matthew chapter 26 and Mark chapter 14 and Luke chapter 22. The scourging at the pillar, similarly, Matthew chapter 20, Mark chapter 15, Luke chapter 23, John chapter 19. You see the crowning with thorns. That's Matthew 27, Mark chapter 15, and John chapter 19. We read in Scripture about Jesus carrying the cross, and that's what we're meditating on in the fourth sorrowful mystery. And you see that in Matthew 27, Mark chapter 15, Luke chapter 23, and John chapter 19. Now, I realize I'm moving quickly and you can't write this all down, chances are, but you can always go back and listen to this at the, usually about an hour after the program is over, we get the archive copy up there. So then the fifth sorrowful mystery, the crucifixion and death of Christ, is recounted in Matthew chapter 27, Mark chapter 15, Luke chapter 23, and John chapter 19. So when you are meditating upon the sorrowful mysteries of the rosary, you are meditating upon these Bible passages and what they convey to us. The joyful mysteries are the Annunciation, the Visitation, the Nativity, the Presentation of Christ in the Temple, and the Finding of Christ in the Temple. So the Annunciation, we see it in Luke chapter 1, and the whole drama of the Annunciation by the angel Gabriel to the Blessed Virgin Mary is seen in Luke chapter 1. You're meditating upon that biblical passage. In Luke chapter 1, verses 39 through 45, it's Our Lady's visitation to her cousin Elizabeth. In the Nativity, Christmas, the birth of baby Jesus, you read about that in Matthew chapter 1, verse 25, and chapter 2 of Luke's Gospel. Then the Presentation of Christ in the Temple. We meditate upon that. Mary and Joseph brought baby Jesus up to Jerusalem, up to the temple. And that's, you can read all about that in Luke chapter 2, verses 22 and forward. And then you know the story of the finding of Jesus in the temple when he was 12. And they thought he was lost and they found him. I've always, in particular, really liked that beautiful finding of Christ in the temple. So the finding in the temple, which is the fifth of the joyful mysteries, for me personally, has always been very touching and beautiful, because I think of all the people whose children are wayward, they've lost their faith, or they've lost a marriage, or they've lost, you know, something of great importance. And so I personally get a lot of encouragement when I meditate upon the finding in the temple, that how panicked and fearful his parents must have been, thinking the worst might have happened, and then their joy is restored when they find the boy Jesus in the temple. That's in Luke chapter 2. And then the glorious mysteries are the resurrection of Jesus, the ascension, the descent of the Holy Spirit, the assumption of Mary into heaven, and the crowning of Mary. Now, we've already gone through those last two, so just the first three, you see the resurrection in many places, Matthew chapter 28, Mark chapter 16, Luke chapter 24, John chapter 20. the ascension of Jesus into heaven, Mark chapter 16 and Luke chapter 24, the descent of the Holy Spirit on Pentecost. That's all about Acts chapter 2. 12 verses there tell you all about that. And then more recently, much more recently, added by Pope John Paul II are the luminous mysteries. And those are the baptism of the Lord, the wedding at Cana, the proclamation of the kingdom, the transfiguration of Christ, and the institution of the Eucharist. So there you have it. And I hope that you find that helpful. I would encourage you, as Mary herself does, pray the rosary. Pray the rosary every day. Don't go a day without praying the rosary. Pray for your family and your friends and all of your issues, whatever they may be, big and small. Pray the rosary, and Our Lady will help you. And I'll be right back right after this. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Good stuff, Cyrus. Well done.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, that's true.
Yes.
Just put a little mark every time I say it. You're going to fill up a sheet of paper
with that. I'm on the backside already.
Hey, do you remember Napster? Back when that was a thing, like 20 some odd years ago?
Yes.
You have a guilty look on your face.
All of a sudden,
a shadow of guilt passed across your face.
I immediately thought of that photo we tweeted earlier of the guy getting run down by his past.
Yeah. So I say, do you remember Napster? Yes.
Yeah. Oh,
Who's
no.
Who's asking? Who's asking?
Yeah.
Open up. It's the cops. Well, then you know where I'm going with this, because Napster was, before it got purchased and regulated and, you know, neutered, basically, it was a way to in essence, steal music, because, you know, the whole BitTorrent technology, and it was the most amazing thing. And there were other ones like it, you know, that were not Napster, but they did the same thing. So those who are listening who may not know this, Cyrus, I know you. I can tell by the look on your face that you know what I'm talking about.
Shh.
Well, I admit I had it too. I mean, everybody had it.
Everybody had it.
Yeah.
So everybody had a blank CD filled with songs that they didn't pay for. Single person I know.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So it's like that old joke that, you know, Baptists don't recognize the authority of the Pope, and Baptists don't recognize the importance of Mary, and Baptists don't recognize each other in the liquor store. Kind of like that. Mm-hmm. But let's just put it all out there. And by the way, Baptist minister told me that joke. So back when it happened, back in what was, I guess it would have been like the mid to late 70s, or not 70s, the 90s, and into the early 2000s, for those of you younger folk who may not know what this is, BitTorrent was a way in which you could open this program, and then you would type in a song. So like, let's say the song that we just played, Owner of a Lonely Heart by Yes. So you'd put that song name in, you'd press enter, and what it would do is it would basically go out on the internet and would find, I mean, hundreds or thousands, I guess, of computers that were hooked up to the internet, just people's desktop computers. And if they had that music on their computer and they had that app open, then it would grab from all these different sources and kind of assemble that song on your computer. So you would now have the song on your computer.
Yes, but that's true.
It is true. But you don't want that on what, Cyrus? You don't want that on...
Ooh, I don't want that on my karmic record.
No, I really don't.
No, you really don't. So here's where I'm going with this. You're saying, why are you talking about this? Here's why I'm talking about this. Because at first, I didn't give it any thought. It's like, oh, wow, this isn't... I mean, people can share. You can share music. And I didn't know who the people were whose computers were giving me this music. And when I had the app open on my computer, there were presumably anyway, people who were taking music that I had from my CDs or that I, and probably all of them at that time was from CDs that were burned onto my computer. But eventually I began to think about it, and I think maybe I read something in the newspaper, and it's like it dawned on me with something that should have been very obvious. This is stealing because you're not paying the royalty for the song. You're getting a bootleg copy. And by this point, of course, I was already, for many years by that point, I was an author. And so for me, what clicked in my mind when I stopped and I thought about it and I realized, wait a minute, it would be as if, Cyrus, you had a copy of one of my books that you bought. And other people wanted a copy of that book, but instead of buying it, you just simply photocopied the book and handed out a photocopy and then photocopied another book, photocopied another. So in other words, you're providing them with copies of the book, but as the author, I'm not being compensated for my hard work, nor is the publishing company being compensated for their hard work, etc. So when it dawned on me, that's what this actually is. First of all, I deleted it, and I deleted the songs that I had gotten from it. And I went to confession. This is what I wanted to share with you because I'm leading up to another story that's related to this. I went to confession, and I don't think the priest really, he didn't even know like what Napster was. And I told him, I said, so for X months or the last year or whatever, I've been getting these songs, getting this music and enjoying it. And it never really occurred to me, but now it does, that this is stealing. And he says, I don't think it's stealing. And I said, well, how can you not think it's stealing? Because you're getting something for free that you would otherwise not be able to get for free. You'd have to pay for it, like a loaf of bread kind of thing. And by the time we were done talking, I'm still not sure he realized it, that it was stealing. But I said, I am convinced that it's stealing. Therefore, I have to stop it. And that's why I brought it up in confession. So the reason I'm mentioning that, and I bet you there are a lot of people who remember when this happened, not when I went to confession, you don't remember that, but you remember when you had Napster or whatever the other programs were. So that's what this reminded me of, this story about Netflix and how Netflix estimates that about 100 million people, or at least households around the world, are watching Netflix for free. How are they watching it for free? Cyrus, you want to take a guess? Can you guess how people are watching Netflix for free?
Just a wild guess, total speculation, sharing passwords.
Oh, bingo. You're a smart guy.
Yeah, I don't know how I put that together.
Nor do I. But of course, I know you looked at the article that I...
that might have something to do with it.
Well, we're trying to simulate things here. So, yeah. So now, don't worry, Cyrus. I'm not going to ask you if you have ever shared a password. I don't think I ever have. With Netflix. I don't think I ever have done that. I don't know. I mean, I have to go back and think about it, but Netflix knows. They know who's being naughty and who's being nice. They're saying that they're going to be cracking down on password sharing. They lost 300,000 subscribers in the first 3 months of this year, and their share prices have dropped through the floor. Netflix has reported a loss in subscribers in more. This is the first time that they've reported a loss in subscribers in over 10 years. And they're saying they could lose another 2 million subscribers by July. Their shares fell 35%, wiping out $50 billion in market value. And so that's a real crisis for them. And we'll see what happens. Who knows? Will they make it? Won't they make it? I don't know. I don't really care, ultimately. But
it's interesting because I don't have it in front of me, but I remember a tweet from Netflix, from their official account. This was probably 4 or 5 years ago. And it was something along the lines, password sharing is caring. Basically saying...
They were promoting it?
Yes. Yes. Really? I will try to find this.
Wow. I bet they deleted that tweet.
That's probably not up anymore. But I remember seeing that. So that's... I'll stand by that.
That's good. That's good. Good to know. Well, the reason this is, I think, of interest to a lot of people is because so many people have Netflix. I mean, it's been a force of nature for, what, the last 20-some-odd years. But the thing is, that's what this made me think of. It made me think of Napster. There's a moral issue here. So if you're sharing your password, or if you are using someone else's password, and it's just sort of common knowledge that you use each other's passwords, so like there's one person or one household paying for a subscription, and 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 households are using that, that is a form of theft. May I say to you, it's a form of theft. And, you know, I don't mean to be Mr. Wet Blanket, but when I thought back to that awakening that I had, and I don't know why I was so dense that I didn't see it early on. I mean, I should have thought about it early on and realized, no, this file sharing on Napster is
so
theft.
You're telling me, out of all your kids, none of them have your Netflix, if you have Netflix, none of them have your Netflix password?
I'm not just telling you that. I guarantee you that.
Really?
None of my kids. Now, if they come to my home, you know, and they want to watch Amazon Prime or they want to see...
You have a little quarter machine, right?
And they can... No. It's up to a dollar now. But no. If they come to my home and they want to watch a subscription service, they just press the button and it plays. That's fine. And they're not, you know, that's not theft. But let's say that, like, my adult children at their homes with their children and their spouses, and if they're just logging in under my password, even if I'm the one paying the $10 a month or whatever it is now for, let's say, Amazon Prime, that would be theft. And it seems really clear to me, and it's really, really clear to Netflix, because they're saying like 100 million people, 100 million households are using this. Just imagine what their monthly charge times 100 million would net them in terms of revenue. You can see why they're pretty hungry to shut that down. So they are using technology to be able to tell who is using passwords.
Got it. March 10th, 2017, Twitter.
You found it.
Yep, it's from Netflix.
You weren't even listening to me. You were like scrounging through Twitter.
That wasn't supposed to be so obvious, but it's, and the tweet for March 10th, 2017 is, "Love is sharing a password."
Interesting.
So they told me to share. We don't share anymore. It's been a couple of years, but
so here's the thing. So you found that live on Twitter. It's actually still up there on Twitter.
I googled Netflix tweet, "Love is sharing a password."
Oh, okay.
And that happened to be what it is. Yeah.
There Interesting. Is. Interesting. Yeah. Well, talk about a miscalculation, because they took them very seriously, to the tune of 100 million households doing that.
Wow.
So anyway, I just thought that was an interesting angle, because life is filled with little moments when you realize, there's something not quite on the up and up about this. And it's easy to rationalize, and it's easy to say, well, you know, no big deal. Who's getting hurt? No one's getting hurt. You know, I'm just using a password. There's nothing immoral about that, is there? Well, when you boil it down, now, I don't care about Netflix one way or the other. I'd like to see them become a better company in terms of their social responsibility, but I'm not interested. I don't own stock in them or anything like that. So for me, it doesn't matter whether Netflix crashes and burns or if they get better and bigger. It doesn't matter. What does matter, though, is that this is a good teachable moment for all of us to be thinking about even these little things. So like if you're using someone else's password. Oh, another example. I remember when Nancy and I first got married, we got married on February 7th, 1981. And what was big then, it hadn't been around very long, was cable TV. So like HBO and the other pioneer cable channels. And there would be a cable box, like we had a little apartment that we were living in when we first got married. You know where I'm going with this, Cyrus?
Well, I don't know where you're going, but I just had a memory of some shenanigans I got up to as a child.
Something that kind of puts you in that picture on Twitter. You're the guy running.
And I completely forgot about it till just now.
Oh, well, let's break it all out in the open here. So there was this cable box, and it's hard to describe it, but it's, you know, you'd open this box up, and it kind of like a circuit breaker box, you know, like your electrical panel at home, and each one of the little things was associated with a particular apartment, and there would be like a little green lock on it or something, and so the cable company could bring cable to your house so you could watch cable TV, but it was super easy apparently for people to be able to just share cable by going into that box and and attaching it to somebody else's. Or I even saw people who had a coax cable and they drilled through the hole, like drilled a hole through a wall so that the person next door could have cable and it would be like on a splitter. It would come to their TV. Well, I realized, I mean, I saw that right away that that's stealing. But where it really came home to me was one of our neighbors in this apartment complex when we were newlyweds. And he said to me, he says, oh, you guys don't have cable? I said, no, we don't have cable. We can't afford it because we were poor as church mice. And he says, well, I'll hook you up. And I said, well, what do you mean? How do you do that? He says, well, I'll run a splitter and I'll run my cable over to your TV and you can watch it. And then and there, I said to myself, okay, this is a crossroads. This is a fork in the road. And I have to make a decision. Am I going to do something that I know deep down inside, this is dishonest, this is theft, or am I just going to, you know, okay, yeah, sure, go ahead, run that, and not really try to think about it? And, you know, I'm happy to say that I said, no, I can't do that. That would be stealing. And it wasn't that much longer than when a cable guy was actually installing cable for us. Maybe a year later, we had a little extra money or something. That guy. And he was telling me, he says, you know, this goes on all the time and people, you know, they bootleg for other people. He says, we can pursue them legally. We can collect. So we can tell if somebody's been using our cable that way. And we have law enforcement on our side and we can actually go after people. And so I remember thinking, man, I'm so glad I didn't go down that road. I don't know how often they would do that. So let's get back to you, Cyrus. Let's get back to guilty conscience.
I don't know if we had just moved in. I was probably 12. I was very handy with electronics and coax cable. Yes, yeah. Very handy. And I noticed that the cable box was right outside of our apartment. And
one thing led to another.
We had free cable for a good year, mm-hmm. And then the cable guy, one day I'm sitting there watching cable, you know, I'm a kid, I was so stupid. He knocks on the door, and I played so dumb. I was like, what? Oh, no, we don't have cable here.
As I'm watching,
yeah, while it's flashing in the background. Mm-hmm. So dumb. So
did the TV screen go dark when you pulled
sure
the plug on
did.
It?
It sure did, yeah. And there was a big old lock on the cable box outside. And
a wanted poster with your face on it.
That was the end of my free cable days. Yeah.
Well, this show is like an examination of conscience.
Yeah,
the more
don't
you listen, the more you remember, the more matter you have to bring with you to confession.
Yeah, that's great. Now I have something else.
Yeah. Well, the truth will set you free. So don't share your passwords with pay services like that. It's a little thing, but I'll leave you with this thought.
And don't break into cable boxes.
Don't do that. No, don't do that. But I'll leave you with this thought, and then we'll take a break. Remember what Jesus said. He said, if you are faithful in little things, and that's a little thing, password for Netflix or something else. If you're faithful in little things, you'll be faithful in big things. But if you're unfaithful in little things, you will be unfaithful in big things. And when those big temptations come along, you want to be prepared and have experience and have a history of resisting those temptations. And the little things is going to help you when the big things come. All right, quick timeout. We're coming right back. The number is 888-914-9149. And I'll bet you, Cyrus, at this moment, a whole ton of people right now are changing their Netflix password so that they can't be sharing it with anyone else right now. I'll be right back. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and relevantradio.com.
Okay, we're back. The number is 888-914-9149. I love hanging out with you. I hope you feel the same way. I'd love to hear from you. My number again, 888-914-9149. Let's go to Eric in Philadelphia, City of Brotherly Love. Hello, Eric.
Hi, Patrick. So I was listening to your Napster and Netflix comparison, And I'll admit, I'm 30, and I may not have a full understanding of how NAFTA worked. So, but from what I understand, you're saying it could be shared infinitely many times in theory with one payment. Is that correct?
When you say it, do you mean like the song? Is that what you're referring to?
Like a song. Sorry, yeah. Like a single song could be, and everybody could be like playing in their homes at the same time.
Yeah, in theory, yeah. So just, and I'm no expert either. So as I understood it, you'd have the program, and this was before Napster became, before it was changed, but when it was still just sort of in the wild, you could put the program on your computer, and then if you were to look for a song, let's say, that song, it would go out and it would find all the other computers, ideally, or I guess around the world even, who had that song on their computers and their Napster was open. And then your computer would just simply draw from all these different ones. So I guess theoretically, it could be just an open-ended number of people around the world that would be getting it. Okay.
Right. So I think there's an essential difference with Netflix. From what I understand, the way Netflix works is you purchase a plan that can operate two screens at a time or four screens at a time, and then it just times out. Like if more than two people try to be on it, the third person either knocks off one of the other two or they can't get on.
Okay.
So to me, it sounds a little bit more like I'm buying, you know, a loaf of bread, feeding it to my family, has a finite amount. But like I buy it knowing I can give this to, you know, I've got these 20 slices I can give out. I've got these two screens I can work with, but then I'm timed out.
Yeah, that may be, and I don't claim to be an expert on Netflix, but the way it's reported, this article that I was just sharing from, Netflix itself is alarmed because however it is they have this set up, apparently there are people who have figured out how to get around what you're describing. And so they're saying that these are not just like the number of screens in your home, but multiple households to the tune of like 100 million households, they're estimating, are bootlegging the signal by using the password from somebody else. I don't claim to know how they're getting around it, but it sounds like it's something more than just simply, you know, when you pay your monthly amount and you get four screens, let's say. This is more than that. It's something that Netflix deems to be, you know, fraudulent, so they're cracking down on it. But I can't explain it because I don't know the technology that goes into it.
Well, I had the same, actually, moral quandary a few months ago. I talked to my brother about it, and he was explaining to me that he felt comfortable with it because he was, like, he knew there were so many screens, and so he felt fine sharing his parents-in-law's password. And when he explained to me, I was like, oh, yeah, actually, I am okay, like, sharing my password and using someone I know's shared password, knowing that, like, okay, we have two screens. I guess we'll, like, split the cost of this. Or, you know, if I'm booting you off, you let me know because, like, you're the primary user or whatnot.
It's kind of like, and to kind of follow your analogy, Eric, it's kind of like the way on Amazon Kindle, if you download a Kindle book, what I found is that over the years of going from one phone to another phone to another phone, plus a few iPads, after a while, Kindle just says you can't download this book because it's already... It's authorized for these other devices, so you have to eliminate one or more devices in order to be able to get it on this device. So I understand the point you're making, and I think it's a valid point. I don't argue with it at all. But my read of this story is that this what Netflix is concerned about is something that goes beyond that, because if that was all that was going on, then Netflix would have no reason to complain because you're paying for it.
Well,
they
would have twice. I mean, if me and I'm also now sharing it with mine with my mother and father-in-law. And if I wasn't, I might be paying them. Whereas right now, like, we might be paying them double because I would be buying some sort of like two screen plan because that's, I think, the lowest they offer.
Okay.
They would be having a two screen plan. Whereas now we together have one 2-screen plan and they're getting, you know, $10 a month from us instead of 20.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure it's definitely revenue driven. Okay. No doubt about it. But if we prescind from the specific plans and just say, all other things being equal, Eric, if you figured out a way to scam the system and get something for free that you should rightfully be paying for, that's a kind of moral dilemma that people really should stop and take notice of, right? So that they don't wind up doing something that deep down inside they know is not right, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I would just say to be careful with this specific example that, you know, if you're sharing it with your you know, kid, and you guys know that you're the two that are using it, I don't think you're sinning at that point.
Nor do I. But what I'm saying, and hear me on this, Eric, I'm not arguing that point. What I'm saying is that according to Netflix, it goes beyond that. It's not just that. Mm. It's not just that, oh, gee, we could have sold a second plan to Eric's mom, but she's sharing the screen with him. Apparently, there's a way that people are able to do this that gets around somehow. And again, I don't know how it is. So that's the part that I think we should be careful about. If it's something that's entirely legal and you're doing it, it just doesn't work so well for Netflix, then who cares?
Wait,
go for it.
Are you saying if we are getting something for free that it usually costs money and we're not paying for it, that's stealing?
Not necessarily. What I'm saying is that if you're getting something that you should be paying for, like the cable, you know, if you want cable, you need to pay for cable. But if you bootleg it and bring it into your home, you know, with a, you know, how we talked about it, then yeah, that would be stealing.
Right.
Anyway, Eric, thank you. Appreciate your voice in the conversation. So Cyrus, what about that puzzles you?
Nothing. I was being a smart aleck.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty clear. If you know you're supposed to be paying for something and you're not paying for it, well, that's bad. It's quite simple. But I don't want to. Yeah. But sometimes I don't want to hear things are bad. I don't want to hear that. Well, I want to have my free Netflix. Mm-hmm. So why don't tell mm-hmm. me that what I'm doing is wrong, because I don't.
Then I have to make a decision.
Right. And I don't want that. I just want to watch my Netflix.
You know what? That is what you just said is so true of human nature. And let's take it in a couple of different directions. What if somebody says, you know, I'm divorced and I'm civilly remarried. I don't want to hear about how Jesus said that if you divorce your wife and remarry, you're committing adultery. I don't want to hear about that. I don't want to know about that. Because I like my situation the way it is. Or I've chosen a lifestyle. I've there's a certain thing that I like to do, and I don't want to hear about how that might be sinful, because if I have to confront that, then I have to either stop doing what I enjoy doing, or I have to do it with a guilty conscience. So I'd rather, like, ignorance is bliss. I'd rather not know, which is another form of, you know, committing. It's another kind of sin, actually, where you don't want to know the truth because you're afraid of what it might make you do or not do. So that's a good point, Cyrus. Well done.
I learned by watching you.
I'm going to give you another ribbon. Remember that ribbon I gave you that says, I try hard?
Yeah, it's no lion. I've been trying, and there's a nice big lion on it. It's, yeah. It's cute. Thank you.
You like that.
Yeah, man. It makes me feel really good. I'm a product of the everybody gets a ribbon generation.
I try hard. Okay. We have time. Let's do it. Let's go to Mary in Lakeland, Minnesota. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Patrick. Yes, I want to make a comment on that Netflix thing. My friends and I, we quilt together for quite a number of years, and we'd share patterns back and forth and photocopy them. Mm-hmm. And one day, a couple years ago, I was doing an examination of conscience, one that was on your app. And in there, it said under stealing that to make copies of copyrighted things, which you should not do, but it was a sin, it was stealing. And I confessed it, and I haven't done it since, mm-hmm. but it really took me back like it did you. And you said, oh, wow, that is really stealing, you know?
Yeah.
So.
That's a good point. I never even thought about quilting patterns. My mom used to make some quilts, so I've seen those before, but it never occurred to me that they would be copyrighted, but I guess you're right. So is it the expectation of the company that produces those that you would use it for yourself once you bought it, but that you're not really supposed to be copying them and distributing them? That's what it sounds like, right?
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what the copyright means, I guess, and I never went... I kind of blew it off, so just
yeah.
So, anyways, yeah, I just wanted to share that.
You know, for me as an author, Mary, that's where it clicked in my mind. because once I stopped and thought about it, and I thought, well, the author should get a royalty, and the publishing company should get paid for the books that they produce. So if it's bootlegged, then that is a form of stealing. And so it became really clear for me at that. But I'd never thought about quilting patterns. That's interesting. I imagine if we thought about it long enough, we could come up with a lot of other examples of how we might infringe in that way.
We could. We could.
A lot of people are feeling like, well, don't go too far, because I don't want to, like Cyrus was saying, I don't want to have to change my life, but the truth will set us free, right?
Exactly. Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome, Mary. Thank you. Yeah, that thought never entered my mind. So, you know, I'm not proposing that anybody be, you know, overly scrupulous about it, but I guess it just was a way for me to think about being careful. And I'm glad that other caller called in, the fellow a minute ago, talking about how it may not be as bad as it sounds. It may simply be that they paid for a four-screen plan and multiple households are using it. And if that's the case, I have no problem with that. What I'm thinking of is if it goes beyond that and people are actually getting something that they should pay for, that's where you got a problem. All right, hour three is about to start. Please don't go anywhere, because I'm coming right back.